Yo, what is going on, everybody? Welcome to the show. Another Thursday, another episode of Simply Sessions. Very happy to be joined on this wonderful American Thanksgiving. I'm in Canada. We did that shit like a month and a half ago. But anyways, very humbled to be joined on this special day by Nico, taking time out after family dinner to still bring you the news. I'm grateful. That's what I'm thankful for today, that he took the time to be here. But happy Thanksgiving to all my American friends that are tuning in. Hopefully your bellies are full of turkey and you're just willing to come in and hang out and get bullish with us. Nonetheless, of course, this is live. Anything can happen. So I defer to my friend Bill here.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. F***ing thing sucks.
If you have not already, please do like, subscribe, and share all those things. They mean a ton. They help the channel a bunch. Hit that little like button just down below the screen here. That helps a ton. Share this on whatever socials you're on. And of course, if you have not already, please do subscribe. I'm on a mission to get to 100K before the end of, not this year, but 2024. I'm giving myself about a year to get it. Can you help me get it? Let's do it. Anyways, guys, I am Ben with the BTC Sessions. This is your Simply Session.
HODL the Bitcoin.
Before we bring in Nico, let's take a look at where we are in the market today. This is timechaincalendar.com, and simultaneously I'm pulling up the chat on the right-hand side of the screen. Starting from this moment forward, all of your messages and your comments are live for the world to see, for better or worse. But with that, timechaincalendar.com, we're sitting at $37,382 per coin. A single US dollar will pick you up 2,675 sats. In terms of fees, next block, you're looking at 70 sats per byte. Not as bad as it has been the past week or two, but be aware. Anytime fee, 26 sats per byte. I wouldn't give that too much credence. And then in terms of Bitcoin mined, 19.55 million of them. That's 93.1% of the total supply. Shout out to sponsors of the show, hodl.com. If you're stacking sats and you have priorities in mind that include peer-to-peer trading, instant self-custody, and no KYC, this is the place to be. You can sign up with nothing more than an email address. Once you get there, choose a currency, payment method, and an amount. You can start viewing offers immediately and stacking non-KYC sats. They also have peer-to-peer lending where there's no rehypothecation. Check them out in the links down below. Now, of course, when you do get your hands on non-KYC sats or otherwise, you're going to want to secure them with some of the best hardware on the market. CoinKite is killing it. My Cold Card Mark IV is, of course, my go-to hardware of choice. I have all of their goodies like tap signers, block clocks, sats cards, open dimes, all of that. And I pre-ordered the hell out of the Cold Card Q, which is going to be just so awesome. So if you want to pre-order that or pick up anything else I mentioned, head to coinkite.com. And you can use code BTC Sessions for additional percent off because they got a Black Friday sale going on, up to 25% off on top of all that. So be sure to check them out. May as well this weekend get some Christmas gifts in there. Moving on, and those links are down below, by the way. Moving on, backups are important. Of course, Seedor has one of the most robust and beautifully designed steel backups to keep your seed phrase safe from the elements, fire, water, corrosion, all that. They have a disc and capsule design. If you ever need to swap out the seed phrase, just simply swap in new discs. No need to replace the entire set. Their sets, by the way, come in two flavors, whether you want one or two full seed phrases. And of course, you can always order more capsules if you like. Check them out. Links are down below and different links for different locales so that you get the cheapest shipping for you. Nunchuck has you covered with your assisted multi-sig needs. These guys are absolutely killing it. I love their assisted multi-sig setup called Honey Badger, by the way. This basically is a multi-sig setup you can do entirely from your mobile device. You can use hardware like tap signers, cold cards, and a ton of other options. Once it's set up, you have baked-in inheritance planning so that your sats can get to your next of kin if anything should happen to you. They'll hold one key, you hold the rest, and the whole thing is no KYC. You don't need to give up private information to set it up and have it work for you. Check out my tutorial and check out them at nunchuck.io. And finally, shout out to Start9, your sovereign computing solution. These guys offer plug and play hardware solutions in which you can host your Bitcoin life and your digital life. So you can run these things from your browser on your home network or from abroad on Tor. And you can run things like Bitcoin Core, Lightning, mempool.space, your private data with files, passwords, photos, and more, AI agents, as well as Nostr clients and relays and tons of other stuff. Anyways, you can check them out. They have entry-level devices, the Start9 Server Lite, all the way up to what I'm running, the Server Pro. If you want to check that out, they just reduced the pricing on it, and you can use my code BTC Sessions Plus specifically on the Pro to get a further 18% off. With that, I'm done rambling. I'm going to get Nico in here, and we need to get filled in on what's going on this week. Here he comes. Buddy, good to see you, man.
Yo! Coming live from my parents' house. Just had Thanksgiving lunch because we don't have Thanksgiving dinner. But couldn't miss Simply Sessions, man. I couldn't miss it. I know my audio isn't up to snuff like it usually is, but I hope these AirPods do it justice.
I'm thankful to have you here, man. It does matter. And happy Thanksgiving to you.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. You know, it's like a big thing in the U.S. It's strange because my parents are Hispanic, but they picked up the holiday. They made it a lunch instead of a dinner. I don't know. It's interesting. I think it's a good excuse for all the family to come together and, yeah, you know, be thankful. And I'm thankful for your tip.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could feel it's I'm actually kind of full because I think when you ate the turkey, it transmitted to me via the tip, and I'm not even hungry anymore. So thank you for that.
That makes sense because my hair started to kind of, you know, stick up when I was eating the turkey. So I guess that was the sink.
Amazing. Well, dude, thanks for being here. I guess we can dive into it. What's been going on this week? What's top of mind for you?
Yeah, so someone just put it in the chat, and it just happened to me as well. I just transferred my funds out of Wallet of Satoshi because they just took it off the App Store in the U.S. I just checked it. Now, you still have the app on your iPhone. I don't trust that, though, because iPhone is not like Android. It's very, like, you know, it's a walled garden, so to speak. Apple has a tremendous amount of control what they allow on your phone and what they don't allow on your phone. So you can't download it right now. That could be seen as a prelude to them just deleting the app, you know, just like deleting it or just taking it off people's phones altogether. So especially with the software update, I'm not going to take that risk personally. But I think that really goes to show the dangers of this choke point of app stores, specifically when it comes to mobile devices. Not so much with Android. I know Android is a little bit better, but definitely with iPhone. I don't know if this is a momentary thing, but I do think it's kind of crazy that this came on the same week that the DOJ did a major press conference in regards to Binance and also the industry as a whole.
Yeah. And I mean, so I was looking through that thread just before we hopped on, and it seems to be at the moment relegated to, yes, Apple App Store, but specifically in the US. I can still see it in the App Store here in Canada. Of course, I'm on the Google Play, but I need to check on the iPad here to see what's up. But from what I hear, it's US based right now. I mean, who knows? But again, I think the most apt description of what's going on is Evan Kaloudis from Zeus, who also has been having trouble with his app recently. He saw the Wallet of Satoshi stuff and he said, storms are brewing. So who knows what's coming?
Yeah. And I think this is the inevitable kind of step, and might as well start with that. And then we'll get to the Millet news, but the press conference this week was really historic. And I think a lot of people were taken by the bait and switch. And the bait and switch is, it was Binance. CZ is a bad person. He was laundering money. He was facilitating crime. But I remember I hosted the spaces for Swan, and we live streamed the entire DOJ press conference. And they had all the heavy hitters. They had the Attorney General of the United States. They had Janet Yellen. They had the people of the people there at that conference, and the amount of times they mentioned terrorism. Mm-hmm. It was like 50 times. I'm exaggerating. I'm being hyperbolic. But it was every single person that took the podium mentioned crypto and terrorism. And I think it was Garland, the attorney general, that mentioned Hamas. You know why that's so significant? Because that was the Wall Street Journal article that was later debunked. But that Wall Street Journal article was used by Elizabeth Warren and her media allies to tap on the U.S. Treasury, the FinCEN, to propose those crazy broad regulations. I don't think it's a coincidence that Garland is mentioning crypto and Hamas, even though we know after the fact that 99% of illicit finance is used, is going through the traditional financial system. So is it too much of a stretch to say that politicians are taking advantage of CZ and all his shadiness in Binance to advance a political agenda? Before getting to the Binance news, like, that's the signal. That's really what happened during that press conference. I'll play you guys a couple clips. You know, we'll read the article. But that was my whole sense of it. I don't know. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as there's bad news in any way, shape, or form, whether it's generated by them or externally, it's just used as an excuse to dogpile on and then pass as many draconian, top-down, restrictive laws as possible. And I mean, again, we've seen this completely outside of Bitcoin. We've seen this with, again, one of the greatest examples, the Patriot Act, right? As soon as there's panic, then that's the time where you can seize more control of your populace and, you know, let no crisis go unused, right?
Yeah, let no crisis go to waste. Absolutely, 100%. And I think that's really what happened. Now, of course, you know, the news is the SEC accuses crypto Kraken. This is the Kraken article, which also happened in the same week, I might add. But the big news is, of course, you know, the Binance news, right? So, like, it looks like a cartel. They're all kind of standing there, you know, and basically lecturing us about money laundering and all these things. But it's interesting because, you know, you can make the same argument that governments are responsible for that too. So here's the Wall Street Journal article. Binance founder CZ steps down, plead guilty. Largest global crypto exchange will admit wrongdoing and agree to pay $4.3 billion in fines. So it's a tremendous amount of money. Here is some clips from the press conference. This one's about 40 seconds long. Here is Merrick Garland. He is the current Attorney General of the United States. Check it out.
In just the past month, the Justice Department has successfully prosecuted the CEOs of two of the world's largest cryptocurrency exchanges in two separate criminal cases. The message here should be clear. Using new technology to break the law does not make you a disruptor. It makes you a criminal. This Justice Department has no tolerance for crimes that threaten our economic institutions and undermine public trust in the fairness of those institutions. And we will hold accountable the individuals who commit and profit from them.
So, like, on the surface, again, it sounds so, like, kind of innocent and, like, you know, like, oh, this is all, you know, this is all good and dandy. But at the same time, you know, someone like you, Ben, freedom fighter, what you lived through, you know, with the Canadian truckers protest. When the government gives you this type of speech and this type of grandstanding, while they're essentially printing, you know, millions of dollars, if billions of dollars, trillions of dollars out of nothing in the process, devaluing everyone else's wealth, it's very hard for me to take what they have to say seriously in these types of things. And then here is Janet Yellen, again, U.S. Treasury Secretary. Also, she was the head of the Fed as well. Let's check out what she has to say.
Nope, I don't think it's planned.
Oh,
currency industry more broadly today and for the future. If virtual currency exchanges and financial technology firms wish to realize the tremendous benefits of being part of the U.S. financial system and serving U.S. customers, they must play by the rules. And if they do not, the U.S. government will take action. Today's announcement shows the Treasury is prepared to use all of its tools to carry out its crucial mandate of combating illicit finance and protecting the U.S. financial system. And this will make all of us safer.
And okay, fine. So I started kind of, you know, and I was really struck when I heard that conference, that press conference initially. The thing that I picked up from it, again, we've been covering this for weeks on Simply Sessions, is how many times they brought up Hamas, how many times they mentioned terrorism, how much they brought up crime. But I wasn't the only one to notice this as well. You know, legendary Marty Bent, TFTC, he says it. This is a tweet, pure projection. The U.S. government is the biggest perpetrator of financial crimes on the planet. He goes on to say, as I am sure most of you are aware by now, earlier today, the Treasury Department and the Department of Justice announced that they have reached a plea agreement with Binance and its CEO, CZ, for breaking anti-money laundering laws brought forth by the CFTC, purportedly helping Hamas finance their operations via the exchange. The plea deal entails that CZ pays a $50 million fine personally to the CFTC, and Binance pays more than $4.3 billion in fines, the largest fine ever levied by the Justice Department on a single corporate entity. When you take a step back and survey the field, the move makes sense and is a win-win for all parties involved. The market is eagerly waiting the approval of the spot Bitcoin ETFs that have filed and are sitting on the desk of the SEC. The SEC's comments to date have been clear that the biggest worry at the moment is, quote, offshore exchanges manipulating the price of Bitcoin. Binance is the largest exchange in the world and has successfully operated outside the purview of the United States government until today. With this plea agreement, the offshore price manipulation problem is solved. CZ is able to get away with a relative slap on the wrist. The Treasury and Department of Justice are able to LARP about how they're protecting consumers at the end of the day. The result of all this will be the spot Bitcoin ETF getting the green light, regulatory enforcement precedent that will be used to pressure companies in the space to make the experience of the users much worse, and be getting a clean exit backstage where he will likely operate Binance from the shadows and reap the massive benefits that come with the next bull run without spending the rest of his life locked in the cage. This is a classic misdirection move that comes with the corrupt pay-to-play mechanisms that have become all too common in our fiat-denominated world. During the Department of Justice, don't actually care about protecting consumers. What they care about is the perception actually doing something beneficial by, quote, taking care of Binance. Nothing makes this clearer than the fact that they have focused in on terrorist financing as the activity preventing. If the Treasury Department and the Department of Justice truly cared about the end consumer, they would have lambasted leading their users to financial slaughter by incentivizing them to burn their hard-earned money on altcoin speculation. The focus on terrorism, pretend that Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are the medium of exchange of choice for terrorists, which will enable them to single out and scrutinize the industry even more moving forward. I'll add to what Marty Ben is saying. I think the reason that they're mentioning that, Ben, is because I think that they're going to go after self-custody altogether. I think that is their ultimate end goal. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, it's a given that there's going to be people that want to go after self-custody, and that a bunch of them are going to be in government. I think you've also got a cohort of people within government because Bitcoin has its tendrils everywhere. So you've now luckily have a cohort of government that also will fight that, luckily, just because of the incentives. And there are people that recognize the idea of Bitcoin as an opt out from the system. Even just today, I saw a clip of Ron DeSantis, and he was talking about his anti-CBDC stance and how the amount of control the government wants to take with that, and by preventing people from using things like Bitcoin. He wants to fight against that. And again, I'm not saying that I'm like a massive DeSantis fan, but the fact that discourse is so loud now and that it's actually an issue. And you have people in government that are vocally, you know, proponents of CBDCs, but you also have the polar opposite where people are like sounding the alarm saying, this is horrible. We can't go down this road. And the fact that the CBDC is an acronym that people are beginning to become familiar with is very interesting. So yeah, are they coming for your self-custody? Are they coming for your coins? Absolutely. But there's also a cohort of people that are going to fight it. And that includes us. That includes everybody that's watching right now. And that includes even a good group of people within governments and you know, in positions of power that also don't want to see this happen.
100%. I agree with that statement. And I think they're really in a fight against time.
Yeah.
Because I think that the sooner they crack down on the quote unquote escape valve, like Christine Lagarde, the higher the probability of it succeeding, because the amount of people actively supporting Bitcoin, holding Bitcoin is lower. 5 years from now, I don't think it's going to be a viable stance in any of the Western democracies to be vocally against Bitcoin, since the majority of the population are going to be holding some or having some type of exposure, especially with especially now that we're on the verge. And, you know, Marty said it himself, we're on the verge of the BlackRock spot Bitcoin ETF. Do you think, you know, in 5 years after that happens, Elizabeth Warren's going to be saying the same thing? I don't think so. I think they're in a race against time. I think they're desperate. And I think that's why you're hearing this type of rhetoric, this type of vocabulary. I think this is another kind of desperate type of stance. We saw that from Christine Lagarde. We've been seeing this from Elizabeth Warren, who's absolutely melting down. That was my take on the whole thing. But I agree. I think we have a growing number of vocal supporters, whether that's, you know, private citizens or members of government, that are huge fans of Bitcoin, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. There's even within Canada, there's people that I personally know in government that they know CBDCs are being attempted, and they are big proponents of Bitcoin and the ability of people to use Bitcoin. So, yeah, man.
100%. Yeah. I agree. It's the leading political opponent, the political opponent of Trudeau, yeah, I think is a huge fan of Bitcoin.
Oh yeah.
And he doesn't like CBDCs at
all.
Oh
no. He's constantly talking about how horrible that would be and the freedoms that people would lose because of that. And he's of course like a proponent of Bitcoin. He is a Bitcoiner. Obviously through the bear market, that was like the main source of ammunition that Trudeau and the Liberal Party had to throw at him as, nothing but price point. Oh, had you listened, which like he never gave advice of like everybody should buy Bitcoin. He just said, I think that anybody should be able to use Bitcoin and use it if they want to as an opt out of the system that we have. But anyways, it was used as fodder to try and be a detractor and like, you know, in a bear market, those things work. And so he's kind of been quiet about it, but he's definitely not strayed from being a fan of Bitcoin.
100%. Yeah. 100% agree with that. It's exciting times. And also in the US too, you have candidates as well. You have RFK Jr. You just mentioned Ron DeSantis. You have Vivek Ramaswamy, right? So I do agree. I think that maybe I was looking at it from a dark. I'm just so used to being attacked all the time. But you're right. There is definitely a lot. It's definitely hope on the horizon. For
yeah,
sure.
I think so.
So in other news, this speaking of hope. Speaking of unexpected turns. This is crazy. Javier Milei unexpectedly won the presidency in Argentina for the first time in world history. You have a libertarian, not a conservative, not a far right winger like everyone kind of labels him, or, you know, a center person. You have a libertarian candidate who believes in Austrian economics. He was just elected the president of a G20 country, country that just won the World Cup. It's a country of 45 million people. And he won the vote by more than 10%. Now, this guy, you know, whatever you think of him, let's just say he has some interesting opinions. And I think he's over the target. The legacy corporate media is losing their minds. Here is the New York Times. Argentina elects Javier Milei in victory for the far right. Argentina's next president is a libertarian economist whose brash style and embrace of conspiracy theories has parallels with Donald J. Trump.
It's always the Trump comparison. Like, why? What the hell? What, this is, if you could search anybody that's not left-leaning, like to the extreme, it's, you would find far right and the Trump playbook throughout every article. It's like the only thing they have to throw, and it's completely inaccurate when you're saying libertarian. Trump is not at all libertarian.
But they all put it, it's all like one, like in one little camp, yeah. You know, it's like, if you're right of us, you're a fascist.
Yeah, like I love the comment here, far right libertarian in quotes with a bomb. Yeah, exactly. How stupid. But again, like the public doesn't know what these terms even mean. There's no definition for them in their minds. They just hear things and they're like, this is the label that I can say because I think I don't like it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, and then I was like jokingly saying it too. I tweeted something out and I said, guys, now we have the political playbook. If a country has 143% inflation, now we know that a libertarian candidate can be elected. That's all we need. it wasn't only the New York Times. It was also The Guardian. Who is Javier Milei? Argentina's new far right president. El Loco takes the stage. El Loco literally means the crazy one in Spanish. So as you could tell, they're not quite excited about this guy. But anyways, I'm not kidding. This is 100% real. This is a throwback to 2001, where now President Javier Milei, he gets sworn into office December 10th as Captain ANCAP, striking down Argentina's central bank with Thor's hammer. I'm dead serious. This is 100% real. This actually happened. And this guy was just elected president. Let's check it out.
El Banco Central está haciendo de las suyas de nuevo. Creo que es hora de cerrar.
So what she said, the translation is, the central bank is printing an excessive amount of money. It's time to close it.
De una buena vez.
For the last time.
Destrucción! 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 Destrucción!
So when he's destroying the bank, he's literally screaming, fuck inflation. When he's hitting the plastic central bank. So, I mean, like, bro, if I would have told you this, you know, if I would have, I think if I ever met Satoshi and I would have told him this would happen, you know, 15, 16 years after he invented Bitcoin, I think he would have had a tear come down his eye, you know, because this is insane. This is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, and the hilarious thing about it, and actually the more interesting thing about it is again, like, number one, you know, never put faith in a politician. But for me, the interesting thing about it is you have a populace of people that voted in an individual that has literally gone on multiple outlets and said, I want to basically get rid of the central bank, and this is the source of our woes, and has these libertarian ideas that he's spouting. You've got a populace that's been so screwed by these centralized entities that they were like, yeah, I mean, this guy sounds good. Let's go with him. And whether or not he acts on it and does all of the things that he promises, to me, is immaterial. It's more that you have a populace that heard those ideas and said, yes, we'll take that, please.
100%. And I'm really glad that you brought that up, because essentially, we always talk about this concept on Simply Sessions, the Overton window. So the acceptable window of discourse has shifted to the point where it would have been seen as unthinkable, radical, even, to introduce the policies that Javier Milei is saying. He's literally like making fun of, ridiculing the idea of central banking. And the people of Argentina were so desperate that became popular. And it has a shot at actually becoming policy, because people are suffering so much. The system has failed them so much that they were just like, this doesn't work out. Now, I think you had a really good comment in terms of him being a politician, and some Bitcoiners had some really good takes on this. So here's, of course, the one and the only legendary Jimmy Song. And he says, I have no idea if Milei will live up to his promises, but he does prove that the promises he's making, eliminating the central bank, severely reducing government, and not going along with the World Economic Forum agenda, is what people want. Here is HODLNOT, the space cat, and he says, and he's responding to HODL Magoo. HODL Magoo said, another politician has been elected that won't solve any of your problems. HODLNOT says, big positive change is a result of many small positive changes. Politicians generally suck, but wield great power to make lives better or worse for people. The direction we are moving matters greatly, even though it in no way marks a finish line. I completely agree. And here is Fernando. Fernando is the marketing and communications director at Blockstream. I believe he's also Argentinian. And he says, observing some highly regarded takes from Bitcoiners who seem to have a limited grasp of Argentina's complexities, Milei's victory isn't just political. It's about a narrative of freedom, open commerce, and defending private property winning today. I don't think these Bitcoiners really understand how deep Argentina's cultural challenges run. This election is a massive first step in shifting mindsets, a fight for liberty that Milei has championed for years. His win is a clear signal that his ideas resonate widely. Yes, Milei is a politician. Yes, the nature of politics means not all promises can be kept. The system demands compromises, but labeling him not ANCAP enough or a status comes from a place of detachment. Keyboard warriors unironically believe this. Keyboard warriors don't understand the massive task battling the hydra-like beast, a beast of the Argentinian state complexities. I don't either, but the least I could do is stand together with someone who's willing to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great way of putting it. There's one comment in the chat that I want to address as well. And it's true, but I also think it's part of the path that we're just inevitably on. This is from James. He said, keep in mind that they're relinquishing control of the printer to Washington instead of locals, because obviously they're going to be dollarizing. He said, this is a win for dollar supremacy, loss for Argentine independence, but thankfully they can use Bitcoin. And I think that's true. Yes. I think we're going to see that dollar milkshake theory play out, where you see the implosions of these small currencies, and there's going to be less and less currencies, and people are going to run to the best of the best fiat currencies, which are still shit. But this is going to extend the life of the US dollar at the expense of all of these other small currencies. But then it's going to come down to the option of the US dollar or Bitcoin. And at that point, all they have is the money printer. And at that point also, Bitcoin is going to be much larger than it is right now, because as those small currencies disappear, and maybe it's not as accessible to use the US dollar, people just don't have access to it, where else are they going to go? right? And so 100%. I think it comes down to, you know, a winner takes all battle to the death between Bitcoin and the US dollar, or, you know, maybe a few, because obviously the BRICS countries aren't going to be super keen on the US dollar being the thing that everybody uses. So there's going to be competition there. But like at the end of the day, there's going to be one, and then there's going to be Bitcoin. And the clear option is going to be something that nobody can control.
100%. I agree. Because it's common sense, right? It's just incentives. If people have a choice and they're informed and they understand between a currency that is designed to lose value forever versus a currency that there's absolute scarcity. Michael Saylor says it best, it's going up forever, Laura, right? Infinity divided by 21 million. Not to mention the fact that you have the choice between censorship resistance versus censorship, but you're trusting a politician not to censor you. I think it's a very clear choice what people are going to choose. And that brings me to my second point, which is Elizabeth Warren once again saying the quiet part out loud. She had an interview, I think this was on Legacy Meet the Press on NBC, I think. And she said some interesting things. And I mashed it up together, by the way, with the video of her at the Senate Banking Committee calling people like Ben sophisticated because people like Ben take self-custody of their Bitcoin. How dare you, Ben?
I need a monocle, I think.
You're too sophisticated, Ben. You're too sophisticated. Anyways, let's check out what Elizabeth has. What Senator Warren has.
Not that banks do wrong. If you think we could improve that in a digital world, the answer is sure you could. But in that case, let's do a central bank digital currency.
Are you there?
Oh, for a central bank digital currency? Yeah. Yes. I think it's time for us to
move. So essentially, because we're, you know, the thing is, when you look at every piece of paper currency we issue, not with coins, but every paper currency has its own identity.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, we're prepared for the blockchain now. with currency. Should that be how we build this?
So I think of it as, again, what's the problem you're trying to solve? Mm-hmm. And if the problem you're trying to solve is fast, almost frictionless ability to send money across the country, do it rapidly, send it around the world, be able to send it to your cousins in Argentina. If that's what you're trying to solve, a central bank digital currency does that. And you don't really need a stable coin for that. You've already got a dollar denominated. You don't really need a Bitcoin to be able to do that. So then the question becomes, so what is it that the Bitcoin, what problem is it solving for? And now we get into a very different space.
Last year, you wrote that, quote, in their attempt to avoid being traced, illegal actors have adopted ever more sophisticated cryptocurrency technologies, such as non-custodial wallets.
Oh my God. It makes my blood boil listening to her talk, man. I can't, like, and the whole time I'm just seething listening and looking at her big, stupid face. Like, I can't, man. Oh.
Ben, you're just way too sophisticated, bro. Okay. Like, you're just too sophisticated of an individual. That's what's going on.
You know what she didn't, I imagine you're going to say this, but I know exactly what she didn't mention as a problem to solve.
Yeah. I mean, bro, you want to do the honors? What was she missing?
Yeah.
What is the problem that Bitcoin solves?
Yeah. I mean, obviously she's going to hone in on, obviously we just need fast, cheap transfers. And if you want anything outside of that, then you must be a criminal. But she fails to mention the idea that the money is screwed, that anybody, like the elites can print it at will and debase the ever-living shit out of it, and you have nothing you can do about it. And she fails to recognize that somebody might not want to be part of that system and might value something where you cannot print and steal people's time and people's fruits of their labor. And one of the best one of the greatest quotes that I've seen recently is It's Breedlove, and he actually quantifies what happened as they printed over the past few years, the X number of trillions of dollars that they printed in the past like 3 or 4 years. And he quantified it. Let's just listen to it. It's amazing.
Central banking is an institutionalized system of time theft, because ultimately the fruits of your labor are a product of your time or energy, right? Time and energy used synonymously here. We printed $6 trillion in 2020, right? In the US. The average annual US salary is $60,000 roughly. That's 100 million years stolen, right? Through the counterfeiting of currency. If each human works from the age of 20 to 70, so that's about 50 productive years per human, the counterfeiting of $6 trillion USD equals the stealing of 2 million human lives worth of productive labor, right? This is to try to make it real, yeah. Like it's a real massive problem. And then of course the plausible deniability that's built into inflation, right? It's Putin's fault. It's Beyonce's fault. It's the supply chains. It's everything but the central bank. So again, we're back to that romantic lie, the deception and the stealing going hand in hand. I think this is hopefully what we can deliver as Bitcoiners, is pulling back the veil on this bullshit.
Yeah. What a quote though. Like this is the kind of shit that people that aren't Bitcoiners send you and say, holy crap, right? That being able to distill it down to something like that, you just in at the flick of a switch, you stole 2 million human lives worth of productivity. That's a huge statement.
Yeah, and that's what she is omitting. That is what she's omitting. That is what Justin Trudeau is gaslighting us on. That is what Joe Biden is gaslighting us on when they literally say government isn't responsible. That's hilarious. Huh, inflation? Huh. Remember he made a joke about that, right? So they're lying about it. They're omitting it, even though they are the ones responsible for this absolute economic disaster, especially if you're under the age of, man, if you're under the age of 35, try affording a home. It's almost impossible. You're priced out, right? And this is all the consequence of money printing. And here's Jeff Booth. And the way that he reacted to this video was perfect. He said, the problem she's trying to solve is, how can I continue to extract wealth from the population through manipulated money? From that point of view, her solution is sound. But for you, it's slavery, right? And I said exactly what you said. I said, the problem that Bitcoin solves is protecting individuals from currency debasement, Senator Warren. I bet you don't have an answer to that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's absolutely disgusting. But this is why it's up to us, sophisticated individuals, to really shine a light of truth on it. Because I just don't think they have a good response. Like, I think like they're, because you see them avoid the thing. Like, it's like CBDC is more efficient payments. It's like, but what about inflation? And they're just deer in the headlights. They don't have a good response to it, you know, because they're, it's like, why are you stealing from me? What is the justification? You already, I didn't agree to it. Why does my money need to be taxed me too? So
yeah.
Anyways, that's my take.
It's unbelievable. And hey, I'm just thankful that I've got friends like you that are willing to fight this fight alongside me. And I'm thankful that we've got a ton of people in the chat and watching this show right now that are also going to take up the cause. So even though it's not Canadian Thanksgiving, I'm thankful for all of you. And thanks for being here today, man.
And for you too, and of course all the viewers, have an amazing night, amazing weekends, guys. Nico signing off. This was your. See you later, Ben.
Later, buddy. Good to see you. Awesome, everybody. Don't go anywhere yet. We got a few things to cover just in the tech updates before we move on. So I just wanted to jump into a couple quick things here. Of course. So some things that we didn't get to touch on really quick. I want to, a couple things. So there's somebody that mined a Bitcoin block, and somebody fat fingered a Bitcoin transaction fee that was $3.1 million. So that's unfortunate. it was mined by Antpool. And so anyways, this is historically set the precedent. It is the highest fiat denominated mining fee ever paid. I'm not sure the state of it yet. I wouldn't be surprised if there was an effort to refund that to the person, but if not, congratulations to Antpool. And so sorry that happened to whoever did it. In and around the realm of fees, Nicholas Berti, who was on the show this past week, he's with Blink. Anyways, they just rolled out an update for Blink Wallet. And so this came about because he was sitting beside a person. This was like a couple of weeks ago. Somebody was paying an invoice. They scanned it. They had a $5 expense, and they paid a $25 on-chain fee because they didn't realize the QR code they scanned wasn't a Lightning QR code. And there was no warning in the wallet. Hey, like your fee is like five times what you're spending here. And so number one, he said we should have Lightning by default. But if your fee is exorbitant, you should get a warning. So they rolled that out for Blink, high fee alert, blah, 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 if there's a huge fee. I think that's a good thing to have in any wallet so that you're cognizant about being efficient of how you use Bitcoin. And I think this should be, again, every wallet should have something like this by default. Let's move on here. F2 pool. And I want to touch on just quickly. There's two parts to this. It looks like they were filtering OFAC sanctioned transactions. And so this is an example, again, of miners trying to filter out transactions and prevent them from hitting the mempool, at least on their own mempool. And so this was the RSS feed of Mining Pool Observer recently reported that six OFAC sanctioned transactions were missing from blocks. One of them didn't propagate to the pool yet. Another was displaced by other transactions. However, the other four transactions were likely filtered by F2 pool. We had a confirmation of this from somebody from F2 pool saying, why shouldn't I be able to do this? However, the backlash resulted in F2 pool disabling transaction filtering patch for now. After a series of erratic posts, F2 Pool's co-founder Chun admitted that F2 Pool had been involved in transaction censoring and stated that the filtering patch has been disabled for now. So this was the original reply. Why do you feel surprised when I refuse to confirm transactions for those criminals, dictators, and terrorists? I have every right not to confirm any transaction from Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping, don't I? Meanwhile, CZ is selling his soul for money he deserves. I guess the pushback has been quite a bit, probably also partly financial. If you're mining with F2 pool and you don't like this, maybe it's time to switch mining pools. So go about that as you see fit, but I just thought you guys should know. And in that realm, Bitcoin Mechanic dropped an article a couple days ago called "Are Mining Pools Becoming a Problem?" I think obviously with that news, yes, but worth a read over on Bitcoin Magazine. I'm not going to dive into the meat of it, but go check that out. It is enlightening. Moving on beyond that, kindo.io. This is for Nostr, the concept of migrating compromised Nostr keys. This is kind of cool. And so this is a Nostr improvement protocol, a proposal rather. It's a proof of concept. It's basically a way to pre-sign a potential next, like a migration notice to a pre-approved next private key. So if your private key for Nostr were to be compromised, you'd be able to still broadcast a message that is time-stamped in a way to say like, hey, this is the new key, and then migrate to it. So kind of cool. Obviously, one of the big challenges with Nostr is, you know, you have your identity tied to a private key, and if that gets compromised, somebody can say anything on your behalf, and you may not have an easy way to say like, oh, I'm the real person saying it, I'm not, because if you both have the same key, How do you differentiate? And how do you say what the new key is? And how do people verify that? So anyways, kind of cool. Very excited to see stuff like that. I am interested in this wallet, but as I read about it, I'm kind of curious as well. I feel like we could do better in some aspects. But nonetheless, Nayuta wallet, I haven't tried it yet, but they have a new release for Android and iOS. It is a mobile Lightning wallet, automatic channel management with an LSP. That's fantastic. It's self-custody, all that good stuff. The one thing that I was like, I think we could vastly improve on this, says, notice on the synchronization screen, our app requires blockchain synchronization before the wallet can be used. It is expected to take several minutes to an hour immediately after the wallet is created or when the app is launched after some time has elapsed to notify you of this. We have made it possible to display the notice, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, I feel like that is, you know, I'm hoping that can be majorly improved upon. Obviously, when I use something like Phoenix, there's a little bit of synchronization, but it takes like a few seconds or something like that. I do notice it's a little bit slower with something like Breeze, but definitely not an hour. And maybe that's dependent on the hardware, the device you're using. But either way, yeah, let's hope that there's solutions for that. But it is good to see more self-custodial, independent, self-sovereign Lightning wallets hitting the app stores. Wanted to highlight this. I got to poke around at it a little bit, and we're seeing some of the first events coming out of Flockster, which is a plugin for Nostr that allows you to create events. So embrace your financial freedom. Discover Bitcoin, Bitcoin meetup on Tuesday, November 28th. But that is... one of the first and a Canadian event. Hey, awesome. First to see on Flockster. So very cool to see all of these different applications being baked into Nostr. That's very exciting for me. Moving on a little bit, and I'm going to tie these two things together in a moment, but hey, have you supported your local merchants or that are accepting Bitcoin lately? I wanted to do so. I had somebody reach out to me about being able to accept Bitcoin payments online via their winery, and they got set up and everything. Actually, they did it without my help, and so I felt obliged that I should probably order some wine. So shout out to Woodward17 over on Twitter, and I was their first Bitcoin customer. I ordered 4 bottles of wine and got it shipped. You can check them out at privato.ca/Bitcoin, privato.ca/Bitcoin. Just be aware that there's going to be shipping costs involved. So you may want a sizable order if you're going to be hit with those shipping fees. But just be aware. Either way, I was happy to support. If you're in BC and Alberta, those costs will be, far less than if you're far away. This guy's in BC, just so you know. And so in terms of events and supporting your local merchants, this is where I wanted to go with this. This is a post that I made about a week and a half ago now. I said, stop bitching and take some initiative. Asking permission has never worked. Anyone in Calgary that wants to bootstrap a local Bitcoin circular economy with me, it's happening. Here comes the Saturday Sat Market. Help me build it. I built a page on the Orange Pill app. And I built a page on Meetup, and I also have a Telegram group. And now it's starting to get some traction. I've got, I think, close to 30 merchants lined up. We have our date on December 16th. We have our venue, which is going to be downtown Calgary in Chinatown, called the White Diamond Conference Center. And so things are shaping up. We're in the organization phase. I want to give a shout out to Matt Cratter, who, and I'm not going to play the clip, but I just wanted to acknowledge that he gave it a shout out on his show just yesterday. So thank you, Matt, for doing that. Very kind of you. Lots of stuff going on. Also, shout out to Odious Debt and Bitcoin Eye's point of sale. Odious Debt bought a bunch of these machines, which are point of sale terminals to accept Bitcoin payments. He sent one over to me. And it's super cool. It's got a little built-in printer, NFC, all of that, and like a point of sale terminal with various apps. I've been able to test it out. I'm going to bring it down to the Saturday Sats Market when we have it. And And it looks pretty cool. I don't know. I think it's awesome. So I'll let you know how it goes using it. But yeah, big shout out to Odious Debt for sending that over, and Bitcoin Eyes POS for creating it in the first place. I look forward to using it. They used these at Baltic Honey Badger, put on by Hoddle Hoddle, and I heard that they went quite well. So stoked to play around with that. Now, if you want to help out with this, please do spread the word. I don't care if you're not here, if you can't be here, but getting the word out that this is happening in any capacity and having content created around it, any sort of articles, anything referring to it, any tweets, any people redirecting to the links to create buzz, this helps me get also local news outlets interested in covering this as well. And I want this to be success. I want it to not just be the local Bitcoiners, but I want it to be the Bitcoin curious, because the idea here is we're going to have every merchant able to accept Bitcoin, but also able to accept cash. And on top of it, have people willing to peer-to-peer swap Bitcoin for cash or vice versa, so that we can begin to orange pill the freedom oriented people among us that are interested in private transactions and meeting their local, you know, whatever it may be, their local farmers, their local other merchants, whatever it is. I want people to go peer to peer, because how do you prevent people from telling you no? By knowing the people in your community, by interacting with them, by creating relationships. So please, please spread the word, reach out to me. I want people to be there. I want people to hear about it. You can find this event on Orange Pill app. If you are not yet on Orange Pill app, there is a meetup page for it as well, Saturday Sat Market. Send that to anybody in the area that you know. Please do. And just share the idea around with people so that more and more people become privy to it. And then in either of those groups, you'll see links for the Telegram group. And please, if you're going to be in the area, then join that. Or if you want to be a merchant or be a part of it and somehow you can join the Telegram group. Otherwise, you know, just sharing and making it, making people aware is a huge help. Anyways, enough of my rambling, guys. I'm going to round out here. Thank you so much for being here. I really do appreciate you guys. Thank you for being a part of this show every single week and being here on Thanksgiving. I'm very thankful for you guys. Of course, if you want to help the show in another way, you can like, subscribe, share. All of those things help a ton. Hit that little like button just down below. Share this on whatever socials you may have, including the event. And if you have not already, subscribe. I am on that war path to 100K. You know, I'm giving myself just over a year to do it. So let's get there. Let's do it. And then lastly, if you need any help, if you need any one-on-one stuff, of course, I have a plethora, 8 years almost worth of free online tutorials. And that's great. And you should educate yourself there. But if you find they're not enough, if you need some hand-holding, some one-on-one time with me, you can book me for one-on-ones on my website. There's a QR code on the screen right now. You can scan that. It'll take you right there and you can book it there. If you're listening to this audio only on the pod afterwards, my website is simply btcsessions.ca. And you can find the same thing there. Anyways, guys, with that, I am out. Have yourselves a wonderful Thanksgiving day or evening, wherever you may be. And I'll see you guys next time for your daily session.
HODL the Bitcoin.